When you are invited to a conference like this, you are supposed to tell you when you first meet Peter Orlik and things like that. Well, the first time I met him was yesterday, so that's easy. But we have corresponded via email, and when he writes in Norwegian, I can understand, because Swedish and Norwegian are close to each other, actually. So I will start with a very general thing, which you all know about. You have a complex vector space, CL, and you have a finite number of hyperplanes in it, an arrangement. And I take the union of all those hyperplanes, and that I call X. And there are two invariants you can associate to such a thing, namely the first cohomology ring of X, which I would take with values in Q, and then the first fundamental group, the fundamental group of X. That's the Orlik-Solomon algebra with, if you have Z, but now I have Q. And you are interested in the relations between those two invariants. There are two things, if I call this R, that you can associate to any graded algebra, a Hilbert series, R. Z is the sum of the dimension of the HIQ, ZI. And of course, this is not a graded algebra, but you can change it. If I call this group G, I can take. This is also well known. G contains the commutator subgroup, contains the G, etc. Let's call the descending central series, and you have a graded associated algebra here, which is almost a Lie algebra. As a matter of fact, it's a graded Lie algebra if you tensor it by Q. Those are two things which are of interest to associate to an arrangement. And you are also interested in the enveloping algebra of this graded Lie algebra. And that's a graded algebra. Which I will call, for some reason, R-shriek. You will notice that later, why I call it R-shriek, this graded Lie algebra. And so this is a graded algebra, so we have R-shriek Z is also well defined. And all this started with Arnold, I think. And this is well-known stuff, but I just repeat it. Arnold showed that for the hyperplane arrangements, I will assume now they are all central. The xi minus xj for all those hyperplanes in CL for I less than j. For those you have that are freak, z is equal to 1 over r minus z. And furthermore, R minus Z is an interesting thing. It's a Hilbert series, and it has a decomposition as a product of factors. So this was a rational thing, and for a long time, and this is known to be related to those graded Lie algebra parts. And many people thought they were almost equal often, but that's not true. That's called the lower central series formula, if it's true, when R-shriek is defined like that. And that's far away from being true. And actually, you might be interested in knowing the difference between those two. Actually, I would try to say something about the difference between this series and R minus Z. And I will, in a few minutes, announce a general theorem about that. First of all, I should say that there are several ways of defining R-shriek. One way is when you are studying a ring like that, H star XQ, which is the quotient of an exterior alibi by a graded ideal, which you know how it looks like. You can plug it into, for instance, Macaulay, and calculate the tor I r kk. But the tor I are also graded. So in the Macaulay language, you first have the tor I r k. The output of Macaulay gives the following. You have first, on the first line, you have all the tor I, all those. And then you have the higher ones, for instance, 1, 5, 10. And then you have the next line, for instance, if there is 2. That means that 2 is the dimension of tor, let's go a little further, 11, 2. Then 2 is the dimension of, this is tor 1, tor 2, tor 3 is the dimension of tor 3, 4. The fourth graded piece of the third tor of R, that's 2. That's how you write it in Macaulay language. So you get lots of interesting numbers here, and you are interested in knowing how they are related to each other. First of all, I should say, I can write up here, that the arc rink is the sum of the tor I comma I or k k. So R3 can be read off from this diagram, and actually you can read off the R or Z also from the diagram. But the general thing is, how can you relate those two things when you don't know if they are equal to each other or not? And for this, I introduced a series in two variables, P R X Y, which is the sum of the tor I J R K K, X I Y J, the dimensions of those. They are always finite dimensions. And here I bigger than or equal to C, and you can, as a matter of fact, assume that J is less than or equal to I, because there is nothing lower for J less than I in my way of looking at the graduation. So it looks like this. So I'm interested in, and furthermore, it's called Kosil, which is something which Arnold investigated, when the tor I J or KK are zero for I different from J. That's one of the definitions of a Kosil algebra. So you could say it's equivalent to say that P R X Y is equal to, it's only on the diagonal, so you could put in P R X Y comma 1 here if you wanted. That's equivalent to Kosil. And there are many other ways, things equivalent to Kosil. A consequence of Kosil is that this is zero, but it doesn't, having this equal to zero doesn't imply that it's Kosil. At least for commutative rings, I have counter examples to that, and Russian mathematicians also have that. But in the general case, I have a theorem now about the general case about this for hyperplane arrangement, this series here. So, and this theorem I will announce here. Oh, I cannot move. Here I can move. So the theorem is the following one. Let A be an arrangement in C3. As a matter of fact, you will see that it's false for higher, but C3 contains lots of things. Then we have the formula. 1 over P, the series P R X Y, minus 1 over the series of R freak at the variable x times y is equal to 1 over x times that difference, which I wrote there, which is 1 over R freak xy minus R minus xy. So this theorem tells you that for hyperplane arrangement in C3, you can always read the big thing which you have there from those two things that you have other ways to study. But this is false. This is not general nonsense, because it's false for L bigger than 3. False for... Oh, this one, I tried to move lots of things here. But it's false for... And as a matter of fact, I will give an example here which shows you that it's definitely false. And that is that I take the hyperplane arrangement related to graphs. You have no graphic arrangement. If you have a graph, I will take a very simple graph. It's a five-gon. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Then I introduce variables in C5, and I use the hyperplanes x1 minus x2, x2 minus x3, and so on. And then it turns out that there is something to that formula in this case also, namely, is equal to minus 1 over x squared, and then the same difference, 1 over r freak. And, but beware, you cannot have a formula like this for other cases. For instance, if I take an n-gon, then you have to write, you can guess, if I have a six corners of the graph, then I have to write plus 1 over x3 and so on. But there are graphs where you can have no formula like this, and actually even for rather small graphs there is nothing like this and nothing like that and the highest. So this is something really special to C3 that you have this. So now I will soon prove this formula. And it was due to Claes Löwall for the general case of a quotient of a graded algebra where the cube of the maximum ideal is zero. Here you can actually, the essential things occur in P2, and there you the Oleg-Solomon algebra has the cube of the maximum ideal equal to zero. So it works actually, but I would give an He proved it by studying explicit resolutions. But I can prove it by general theory in a quite different way, using a result by Milner and Moore. And I will do it now, actually, so you can see that it's not very deep, but it's related to lots of other things in commutative or non-commutative algebra. First of all, the tall eyes. This is an algebra, if I write just star here, it's an algebra. But it's more interested, and it's skew commutative and things like that. It's not so extremely interesting as an algebra. It's much more interesting to consider the dual vector spaces. They form what's called the X-algebra. You need an X-algebra. The Unida. And we are, k is a rational field. When I write small k, sometimes I'm in the rational field. I'm sorry about that. Small k is equal to the rational field here. And it turns out to be the enveloping algebra of a big graded Lie algebra. It's always a result also by Milner and Moore. But they have another theorem which is much more suitable for this case. It turns out that the diagonal here is exactly the subalgebra generated by x1, comma 1, r, k, k. This subalgebra is isomorphic to R shriek. And R shriek, this is a Hopf subalgebra also. So this is a Hopf subalgebra. And now there is a theorem of Milner and Moore a long time ago, published in Annals of Mathematics. It says the following: if you have two Hopf algebras, H1 included in H2 Hopf algebras, then H2 is free both as a right and left H, right and left H1 module. That's a very powerful statement, and that you can say that this theorem is essentially an application of this result. And how does that come about? It comes about that you are interested in the multiplicative structure of the extra algebra. And that will be an extra bonus which I will get when I prove this theorem. Remember, you have the multiplication in the Yoneda extra algebra. You have x, I write star minus 1 r k tensor x1 r k k. And the Yoneda product goes into x star r k k. Actually, I should say that many people think it's difficult to see the multiplicative structure of this x algebra. It's a non-commutative algebra. As a matter of fact, you can say that Yoneda, here is the way of seeing the Yoneda x algebra. Take the ordinary composition of modules over rings, Lm, Mn. You have F here, you have G here, and if you compose them, you get to Hom Ln. The Yoneda multiplication is just the easiest way to generalize this so it's compatible with all possible exact sequences you have here. So it goes over to the X and so on. So there's essentially only one possibility. So now if we have this, I would like to know what is the quotient here. For some reason, I will write the quotient Sm here. What is the quotient? You have a map, you need a multiplication. And now you have to say that this, I call this algebra B, and the subalgebra generated by X1, I call it A. It likes as a sub-Hopf algebra. What you have here is essentially B tensor over the ground field, which I write K as you, again, over A of K. It's equal to that. Because A is generated by X1, and so the quotient here is equal to this tensor product. And what is the Hilbert series of that tensor product? Since the Milner-Moore theorem says that this big thing is free over the small thing, it follows, I'll pick up here. That's true in general. If you have a subhop algebra A of a big one, and then you consider B tensor AK. I'm interested in the Hilbert series of that. And now everything is bigraded, so I have a Hilbert series in two variables, X and Y. I claim it is equal to the Hilbert series of B in X and Y divided by the Hilbert series of A in X and Y. And in this special case, we have a very nice result, namely that this Sm, which I get here, the double series of Sm xy, is the series of the big one, which is P or xy. And the small one, here you have everything on the diagonal, so it's R freak x times y. So if you start by an exact sequence like that, you know the Hilbert series of that. So you just have to see a little about what the kernel is here. And I will not do that. I will just tell you that the result is the following. Namely, that you have this X or KK, tensor X1 or KK, goes into the big X star or KK, goes into that SM, which I have defined there before. And it turns out if you analyze this, noting that this is the square of the maximum ideal of R dual, and if you consider the corresponding long exact sequence related to R mod M squared to R mod M, and M mod M squared, which is a very easy exact sequence, you get that this can be prolonged by X star R mod M squared, comma K. And then you have to, the long exact sequence, this is the first part of the long exact sequence related to that. It comes out, we get a little lower, so you have to do this and take everything in degree, positive degree, and you have to take everything of Sm in positive degree. And furthermore, since in a long exact sequence the indices go up or down, you have to adjust for that. And now if you take the alternating sum of all this double Hilbert series and use that Sm bar, it's a part of Sm which are in degree bigger than zero, and note and use the following short exact sequence, and use that if M cube is zero, this one is actually free, it's of the form X star R KK tensor X 1 of R mod M squared, comma K. It's another exact sequence where you go one step further. If M cube is zero, you get this. So actually what you get? You get a resolution of this by a free module B. This is my B. This is free, and this, if M squared is zero, is free, B free. And so this is a third syzygy of the thing you have down here. So now you have to know what the tall I of B K S M are. And that is B tensor A K. So it's B tensor A K. And since B is A free by the Milner-Moore theorem, this is the same as tall I A K K. And the final upshot of all this is not only the proof of that theorem, but the proof of a more general theorem, namely that the tall I of this big algebra, the tall I of this algebra, which Sir, I would like to, just for the first one, tour RIB, this is Alibaba KK. Sits in the middle of an exact sequence where you have tour 1 star AKK. And this is my R freak. And this is my whole X algebra. And it goes to tor 3. And then you have to adjust if you have, so it's star plus 1 KK. That's an important result, and it tells you how the big X algebra or the hyperplane arrangement where its generators can live. Because if you have any algebra, let's call it H, you know that tor 1 of HKK is, H is graded, and this is the minimal set of generators for H. Tor 2 of HKK is the minimal set of relations for H if you divide it by a free algebra on those generators, and so on. And now, so this gives a result about the minimal number of generators of B, how that those are related to the homological algebra of this R freak, which lots of people have studied. And why hasn't R freak been studied so much? That is because it's R-freak can be explicitly described. If you have a hyperplane arrangement, you have this R, which is the cohomology of the complement, and you have the R-freak, which it's actually what's called the Kusil dual of R. You write R as a quotient of an exterior algebra with some relations, but you are only interested in the quadratic relations. And so this is of the form T quadratic, some relations quadratic plus higher. But you're only interested in writing the exterior algebra, which is which in a sense is a tensor product, divided by some relations, quadratic relations. Then you take, the quadratic relations, making this to be an exterior algebra, and then you have some more quadratic relations. So any time you have an algebra which is a quotient of a tensor algebra, let's call this algebra B, or like this, it's a quotient of a tensor algebra with a subalgebra which is just inside the tensor V. You can see that all tilde freak can be defined as follows. You have the tensor W sits inside the tensor V. And then you take just the dual of this map. So you get let's see now. It goes down to the dual of this map is the kernel. It's T V star divided by a map which goes from W star the orthogonal of W star in V tensor V. So it's a set of all maps from that to K which annihilate this. This is our freak. And so it's very easy to see what it is. And so if you have a hyperplane arrangement, you have R and you have R freak. And now you are interested in knowing what about the X algebra of the generators of the X algebra, X star. To see that, if you have a hyperplane arrangement in C3, it's sufficient to construct R-freak. And then to study the resolutions of Ars Week. But here you cannot apply Macaulay. There is no Macaulay for working with an algebra of this form. It's a quotient of an exterior of a free algebra by some relations, and it's extremely non-commutative. You cannot use Macaulay. But there is a program which gives results which are like Macaulay. And actually, when I asked the man who wrote this program, I asked him to let the output be the same as in Macaulay. So if you use this program, I will say a few words about it in a few minutes. The output R here, it's exactly like Macaulay. You have, here you have, on the first line, you have tall I R shriek, KK. And in this case, it's the Hilbert series of the ring R, where you have taken away the higher than quadratic relation. So you the first line is very easy. You forget about the higher than quadratic relations in R. It's essentially the Hilbert series of R with some extra things, which you can easily see what they are. And since the R freak is generated in degree one, you cannot have anything here, because that would be tor 1, 2 of A R freak KK. So this in degree 1. In degree 2, you have nothing here lower. You have only the relations here. But in degree 3, lots of things can happen. And actually, the diagram, which for Macaulay looks like this and going very high up, goes very high down, low down in this case. And actually, if tor 3 star R freak, there are examples where this goes all the way down to minus infinity. And in this case, the X algebra of the Olick-Solomon algebra is not finitely generated as an algebra. And that was an answer to a question of Denham and Susio. And actually, it's very simple arrangements. You can see that it's not. It's very much related to Stalling's examples. But it shows that Stalling's had some examples in group theory, and this is you have a lot of things like that here. So first of all, I should say, how do you calculate those things? There is a way, in case you have any algebra A, there is a way of calculating the minimal resolution of the residue field. You can use lots of general stuff, but doesn't work if you want to have something concrete. For instance, the bar resolution is unsuitable. It's too big, and if you implement it in different programs, you get nowhere. So actually, it was David Anik who wrote a paper. He has now left mathematics, unfortunately. He wrote a paper in Transactions of the AMS a long time ago. It's in the 1980s, which is called Homology of Graded Algebra, Transactions of the AMS, where he suggested a method which is, I mean, the bar resolution is an enormous resolution of K over R freak, and the minimal resolution is the smallest one. Both the bar resolution you can write down, but you cannot calculate it. The minimal resolution is what you are interested in, and that's difficult to calculate. He had a resolution of the residue field which lies between those two extremes, and he wrote in his paper that this would be possible to implement, but he didn't do it. But that has been done now, so I will tell you a little about that. First of all, Macaulay is very good for commutative or skew-commutative ring, but if you are leaving those areas, it's very hard, and calculations stop rather immediately. Actually, you cannot use Macaulay for that. And actually, Jörgen Backelin wrote a program which he calls Bergman, which is called after George Bellman in Berkeley, because he uses a lemma of George Bellman in his program, which calculates for any algebra, that's the quotient of a free algebra by some relations, which calculates the Hilbert series of this graded thing, the graded relations. And actually he takes the non-commutative version of Gerber basis theory, which if you try to implement it in ordinary ways, it's so hard that computations stop rather quickly. But he wrote it in Lisp, which is his other language. He thinks in Lisp, actually. And he knows actually how to do it in the most efficient way. And it turned out to be a very beautiful program, which has been used very much. And when I wanted this, for the non-commutative thing, the correspondence of this tour, I asked him and also a friend of him, Viktor Öfnarotsky, and another, there was a team working with this, Svetlana Koyukar, and lots of other mathematicians. And they really found a good way of implementing David Anik's ideas. And the subroutine here is called Anik. You call the subroutine Anik in Bellman and it calculates this. And it gives exactly this, the Macaulay result. But it's very hard even in this case. So it takes only the diagonal things up to certain degrees. So actually, so if you go up like this, you have all the things of degree 3, 3, 3, 3, 4, 3, 5, 3, 6, 3, 7. Here is degree 3, 7. Then it calculates degree 4, 6, and like this. And the alternating sum of those dimensions is equal to something which is well known. So actually you get very precise results. And actually I have not so much time, but I will finish. I had planned to talk about when my constructions, when this is a transcendental function. And that is actually published in a paper, just published in a paper in experimental mathematics, which I can send to you as a PDF file if you're interested. I can send it even today because I have email access here. So I will talk about something else, about where this gives very nice results and gives something about groups that I don't know anything what that means, actually. So I will talk about that. You know about configurations. That's an old subject which was studied by Hilbert. Hilbert and Korn-Fossen, they had wrote a book called Geometry and the Imagination. And there are configurations which I will not have time to go into, which are called N3, where N is an integer. I will just take one case, the Pappus configuration and the hyperplane arrangement related to that. So the Pappus, so this is Anik related to Pappus, I will describe now. And Anik didn't know it, and Pappus certainly didn't know. So if you have two lines, and you have three points on the lines, and you have three other points on the other lines, A prime, B prime, and C prime, and you draw lines here. You draw from A to those which do not contain A, so you get those lines. Then you draw from B to the other points which do not contain B, so you get this. And from C you draw to A and to B. The Pappus theorem says that those lines are on a line. So you have 9 points here, and you have 9 lines. And that is called a 9-3 configuration. I will not go into detail about this. And for such a configuration, you have a hyperplane arrangement, and you have RZ, and you have R3Z, and you would know how they, like to know how they are related. And I can tell you the answer about that. The reason why I started to this is that there are another arrangement configuration called H3, which is the MacLane called also the MacLane configuration. And that was the case when it turned out that R freak is a transcendental function. It's also explained in the paper I have here. And I then degenerated the MacLane a little to something where you could prove by hand that you have this is a transcendental function. So therefore, I started with higher configurations. And it turns out that there are, if you look in Hilbert Kornfossen's book, there are two other 9-3 configurations, which I will call M32 and M33. And they are actually, Alexander Susi explained, showed that this one was different from that one. But those two, they are also different, and they have the same RZ and the same R3Z. But nevertheless, they are different in the sense that if you include them into C, in projective P2C, take the complement and the first homotopy group of that, the two groups are not isomorphic. And the reason why they are not is that you can calculate the corresponding x values of that and that are not isomorphic. And therefore, this Lie algebras, the sum of the lower central, the enveloping algebra of the lower central series, those two Lie algebras cannot be isomorphic, and therefore the group cannot be isomorphic. And it turns out that if you write down in the Macaulay fashion the tall I or freak J, the diagram of that, I have to go to my papers to see what. You will see the difference between the two of them easily. I hope I found it now. This is something you could never... let's see where I have it. Here I have it. In both cases, in one of... I will take up, which I cannot, so I will do it here. How much do I have? 5 minutes. Oh, I haven't used that. Good. So if you take... I don't remember which is the first one. Both of them, 1 over R freak Z, the non-Pappus 1. The non-Pappus... There are pictures of those configurations in Hilbert's book, but I will not do that. It's equal to R freak. It's equal to both of them are the same. It's 1 minus 2z to the let's see. No, I'm sorry. 1 minus z to the power 10 divided by 1 minus 2z to the power 9. And the Pappus, I've also, you might be interested in the corresponding for the Pappus is 1 minus Z to the 12, 1 minus Z 2 divided by 1 minus 2 Z to the 10. That's the Pappus, but there you see immediately that they are different. But here you have two non-Pappus which have the same R freak and the same Hilbert series. How can you make them differ? The first of them has the corresponding Annick diagram, which I will call Annick diagram instead of Macaulay diagram. It's 19.2, so that is essentially the Hilbert series, and you have an extra 2 here, which I can explain if I have time. 29.1, you have 21.46, you have 21.91, and 21. So, and it continues like that with a tor 3. And here you have the tor 4, which I will not be interested in for the moment. That is tor 3, 3, tor 3, 4, 2, 3, 5, and so on. So it means that the X value of the first non-Pappus configuration has those generators in degree 3 or 4, and 21 generators in degree 5, and so on. So, and then it continues like that. But for the other Pappus configuration, it looks like this. Let's see now. 1, 18, 8, I'm sorry, I write it here. It looks like 1, 8, 19, 2. And then we have 22, 29. So from that point of view, they are the same. But if you continue down here, you see you get a 2 here and a 22 here, and 45, 1, and 20, 91, 20. So it looks like this. So you see that this, the other non-Pappus needs 22 minimal generators for the X algebra, but the first one needs only 21. So they are quite different. And actually, the corresponding groups, if you take those configurations and put them into P2C and take the complement, the fundamental groups are almost the same, but they are not isomorphic. So, and nobody has written down those fundamental groups and tried to compare them. And actually, I was very much upset. Actually, 1 over R shriek is always the alternating sum of the tor I star k k z minus 1 to the I. You can prove that easily. So that means that and you can see it here, 29 is the third part, and then you have to take 22 minus 2, and it's the same as 21 minus 1, and then you have 20 minus 45 is 21 minus 46. But here you need an extra 1 here, which lies in tor 5, because the alternating sum of 20, 91, and 1 should be the alternating sum of 21, 91, and nothing. So here you have two groups, which are very like each other, but which are not isomorphic, because the lower central series algebras, although the lower central series algebras, which I call, are the same, or have the same Hilbert series, their homological properties are different. So this whetted my appetite, so I tried with a I didn't have time to take you 10 free arrangements, but Stormfels and White, they have constructed, it's just a matter of time to do this. They have, actually this was a bigger project and it took half a day. It's Stormfels and White. Stormfels and White. There are 31 free configurations of lines, like this, with this. And they have explicitly coordinatized all of them. And it turns out that you have only 2 possibilities for the R freak, but you have 30 different possibilities for this. So you have 30 different groups, which you would like. Maybe you have 31, but my program couldn't work higher up. That I had to work up to degree 7 to see that they were different. So you have 30 or 31 different finitely presented groups where the lower central series algebras are isomorphic, but the groups are not isomorphic, and that nobody knows what the groups are. And I will finish by a conjecture. I found, and you can see in that paper, that those are freak. It was Z. They were transcendental functions. But what are they? That's a reasonable question, and I will try to answer that with a conjecture. And the conjecture, you have to be careful here about this. Actually, There are actually seven, so I will call it the question conjecture for some reason. If I can find it somewhere now. You say that, let us just, since I have almost exactly no time, I will just write it like this. You have some, let HA, the hyperplane arrangement, be the all the R-shriek Z series you get from all different hyperplanes. And actually it's sufficient to, if you're only interested in R-shriek, you can by the Lefret's hyperplane theorem restrict yourself to C3. You get a class of all those R-shriek Z. And now there is an old paper by Annick and Gulliksen in Journal of Pure and Applied Algebra in 1985, I don't remember the number, where they have 17 different classes of series which were rationally related to each other. Then I have to explain what rationally related are. You have one series which starts like one with integers, and you have another one, H1 and H2. You say that they are rationally related if they are polynomials, A11 plus HA12 divided by A21 H2 plus A22. If one series can be obtained by a transformation of H2 like this, with polynomials here, then you say that they are, and conversely, and of course a determinant here has to be non-zero. And conversely, then they had 17 classes of series which were rationally related. And I can explain some of those 17. I have not 17 minutes, so I will just say that my conjecture is that this is an 18th class. But actually, Sayre's conjecture, which wasn't a conjecture, it was a question, was that all those 17 classes coincide with the rational series. And he was furious when Annick called his thesis, which he published in Annals of Mathematics, a counterexample to conjecture of Sayre. Because Sayre wrote to the editors and said it was just a question, so Annick has to correct this in Annals of Mathematics. So, but here I have no... I could even announce this as a conjecture. All those series are... So I have at least to explain one of those. For instance, if you take any free algebra, say with generators of degree 1 and all possible relations finitely presented, that's one of the classes. You take the Hilbert series of those, that's one class. The other class, which is rather astonishing, is if you take any local ring, commutative local ring, where M3 is equal to 0, then the corresponding tor I are commutative Noetherian ring, all those series you obtain like this, that's a third class. That's one class more. And that class where you have MQ0 is rationally related to the class of Noetherian rings where you have no restrictions at all, commutative Noetherian. And then you have also, if you are interested in algebraic topology, you have simply connected CW, finite simply connected CW complexes, and you consider the homology of the loop space of that with rational coefficients, and you take the generating series for that. For all simply connected finite CW complex, that's another class of those 17. And actually you can even restrict yourself to CW complexes which are obtained by a wedge of two spheres where you attach a four cell, a finite number of four cells that are four-dimensional finite CW. That's another class, which all those classes are rationally related. And my conjecture question is, what you get for hyperplane arrangement, is that an 18th class? So I finish with this talk. Thank you.
Questions?
Yeah?
Do is the global dimension of our street known on this planet?
No, not in general, but it was three in that case. In the case of Stallings, here I think it's nine or something like that. But you cannot calculate as far as that for the moment. I used a computer with lots of memory. I need about 10 gigabytes of memory. To do that with Bergman, which is a Lisp, an ordinary 32-bit computer, the Lisp of Bergman can only use very small memory. But for 64-bit Lisp, you can use much more memory. But it's hard. On those computers, you are not allowed to work so long. It takes maybe 24 hours to go one step higher here. So, well, I don't know. Actually, it's time for theory here. It's time for theory.
Yeah, so you have these examples of the
all of the algebras have the same ranks,
but they don't have the long, the algebra, right? The algebra.
Yeah, I have
that
here.
How about for the homotopy algebra? Do you have two
arrangements? Yeah, of course. They cannot be, they cannot be, the corresponding big homotopy, they cannot be.
So suppose that the polynomial algebras are isomorphic.
Yeah. Oh, if they are isomorphic.
Right, the thing is about the homotopy.
No, then the homotopy algebra has this, or probably isomorphic in C3. In C3, but higher up, I don't know. Because the theorem which I have erased, it's much more complicated in C4 and C5 and so on. Or shriek doesn't change because of the hyperplane, Lefret's hyperplane theorem. But H and or shriek are very different from each other if you go higher up. That's the problem.
Oh, yeah,
good.
No.
Oh, okay.
So,
I thought you were Greg Smith. I haven't met him.
No.
He wrote a program for Macaulay program for hyperplane.
I see.
He's in Montreal, so I thought he might be around.
You mean this week he's in Montreal? Or?
I don't know.
He's
exactly.
At Queen's University, yeah. Which is in Kingston.
No, okay, okay. But okay. To your question.
Yeah, so I was a student at Queen's.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. So the a bunch of questions. The first was, you mentioned that there are examples where, this condition is not sufficient to give causality.